I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group in beautiful Bend, Oregon. We meet 6 days a week. Well, 7 days right now during the pandemic, we meet 7 days a week and we are all on Zoom. I want to take a minute and say hi to Ash. I haven't seen you since the since the Bronx. I absolutely love these passionate AAs that I have met during the pandemic. And it's awesome being able to hear, you know, the younger generation. And I hope that this doesn't embarrass you. But I wanted to let everybody, okay. So I got the go ahead. I was on a meeting, that's an AA meeting. And, there was a topic that was getting a little bit off of AA and, a couple people spoke up. I was one of them. It was a pre my share. I said something pre my share and then I shared on topic. And one of the people who spoke up, and I love this, is somebody who, I mean, I don't know how old you are, Ash, or how long you have sober, but this girl had a problems other than alcohol pamphlet in her hand that she read from at group level in a big book thumping meeting. And I'm like, damn, that's my girl. So with that, I just wanted to thank, those of you out there who love all three legacies and who, sometimes it's really hard to stand up for principles, even when we stand alone. And I get that. And there has been many nights in the past 11 years. No, I was the one breaking all the principles in my first couple of years, but there's been many nights in the past about 9 years that I have went to bed crying myself to sleep because of what people think of me and because of what people might think of me and because of what my perceived, all of these things that I have natural desires to be liked, to not piss anybody off. And when I put the good of AA as a whole, when I do what anonymity, the definition of anonymity in Alcoholics Anonymous is sacrificing personal ambition for the common good. And when I do that, it doesn't feel good all the time. It's a lonely place. But when I'm brushing my teeth at night and I'm looking at myself in the mirror, I know that I have put in Alcoholics Anonymous and spiritual principles over carry. And I sleep well, I sleep good at night tonight. And that's because of AA and what this program has taught me. So with that, I want to start up right where we left off last week. And that is on, we're on Bill's story, right? So that's a cool place to be. I love Bill's story. I just got done meeting with a sponsee about 20 minutes ago, and we are on Bill's story too. That's where we are in the book. And so I get to just, I guess, redo this. That's the point of going through this work like this is I'm just going to kind of take you through it the way I take the women that I sponsor through it. I'm not going to read to you the whole first 103 pages. Don't know what that's about. I'm not going to read to you the first 103 pages, which are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as laid out in this textbook, but I'm going to be kind of emphasizing my highlights in my study edition, which are what I call my instructional highlights. So they're not my personal highlights. That's in my personal big book. This big book that I use, it's large print and it only has the part of the book you're supposed to study in it. It doesn't have any of the stories or none of that in. And this is the one I take people through the work with. And so the only things I have highlighted in this book are the instructions, the clear cut instructions. And I love that about this book because somebody like me needs clear cut instructions for sure. So, we're on Bill's story and we just went through one of my favorite pages, which is page 13. And it took us through Bill's third step. And these steps aren't in order back when Bill took them, but then 4, 6, 7, 5, 8, 9, 11, 10. And now we're going to go, we're going to start getting into Bill's 11th step. And it says, never was I to pray. Oh, we already did that. Okay. My friend promised when these things were done, the 12 steps, the previous 11, I would enter upon a new relationship with my creator. that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in a power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the order, the new order of things, were the essential requirements. Notice how they're using the R word there. Not the essential suggestions. And again, you know, this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm just going to remind you of this every time it uses the R word, because the R word is used a lot in these instructions. So, you know, this is a suggested program full of requirements, not a required program full of suggestions, right? Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Here is my grandma Lil's recipe for the best chocolate chip cookies in the world that is suggested to use when company comes over. Now, I don't have to use that recipe. I can use the recipe that comes on the chocolate chip container. I can use the recipe out of my favorite cookbook. I don't have to use my grandma Lil's recipe. But if I use that recipe, the ingredients are not suggested. I can't just say, you know what, I'm on a diet, I'm going to take the butter out and use applesauce instead. And then when they come out and they taste like shit, I can't just say, oh my God, these do not, you know, the outcome isn't the same, right? The recipe is suggested, but it's the steps as they are. Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for everyone. We only have one suggestion, these 12 steps. And so I like to point out, you know, when this book uses the word requirements and musts, it's not being two-faced. It's not saying one thing and doing another. It's simply saying, you know, to follow our path. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, right? Half measures avail us nothing. Half of the recipe is going to avail us not something really edible. So that's why they use the word, the R word in the book. So simple, not easy, right? I have that highlighted and I love that because I can use that within all of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like it's simple, the right thing to do. It's always simple. And unfortunately it's never easy, right? It's never easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. God, who wants to do that? I must turn in all things to the Father who presides over us all. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was an utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through me, through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. For a moment, I was alarmed and I called my friend, the doctor, to ask if I were still sane. Now, I want to take a minute there and dissect that word, okay? We're going to talk about alcoholic insanity a lot in this next chapter. We might even talk about it a lot We already talked about it some, but there's a difference between sanity, like what this line is talking about, like needing a straitjacket, chewing on my sleeves, being thrown in a padded room, right? Being locked up. That's not the same thing as alcoholic insanity. And I hear sometimes in meetings, you know, well-meaning members who have 20 years of sobriety sometimes saying, oh, my alcoholic insanity was crazy today in traffic. I'm sorry, but your road rage is a human characteristic and it has nothing to do with your alcoholism. Like we suffer from alcoholic insanity. Right? Bill was suffering from alcoholic insanity. On page 7 of Bill's story, and we already went through this, it says, it relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. So Bill's suffering from alcoholic insanity already. So then why would it say that he called the doctor to ask if I were still sane? Well, those are two different types of insanity. He's talking about sane, like, oh my God, like, am I seeing things? Did the window really like blow open even though it was closed? And did I really feel the wind blow through me? And did I really was lifted up, or like, am I on acid? You know, like he's going, is this stuff in my head? Am I insane? But that has nothing to do with alcoholic insanity of step two. So I really like that he used that word at least once in the book, the way that everybody else uses it in the alcoholic insanity of step two, because it proves that that's not the sanity he's talking about. Finally, he shook his head saying something had to have happened to you. I don't understand, but you, this is the doctor, Dr. Silkworth saying this, but you had a better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. The good doctor now sees many men who have had such experiences. He knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came, and this is Bill's 12th step, right? He's getting to step 12. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. And I have this whole paragraph highlighted because this is the beginning of Bill's 12th step. Perhaps I could help some of them. In turn, they might work with others, right? 90% of this fellowship is giving away what's so freely given to us. We, you know, you got to give it away to keep it, right? Like that's the whole foundation of this fellowship. I'm sorry, this program. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. What did that sound like? Well, that sounds like the end of the short form of tradition or step 12, right? Like practicing these principles in all of our affairs. That's what he's talking about here. We're in Bill's 12th step. So my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works is dead, was dead, he said. And how apparently appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. So what does faith without works is dead mean? Well, he just said it. And the entire program of action, the entire, you know, all of the other chapters, more about alcoholism, working with others, into action, they are all taken pretty much word for word out of Bill's story. They're Bill's experience. And if we go to the last page of step 11 in this book, right before working with others, and if we look at the very last on page 88, and I'm just going to ask you to jump ahead real quick. If we go to the very last where we are in Bill's story, right, where we are in the steps, this is where it is in the book. We're ending step 11, going into step 12, which is where we are in Bill's story. And this last paragraph says, but that's not all, after going through steps 1 through 11, right? It says, that's not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. Well, what kind of work? What do I have to do? What kind of work? Well, the next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12, working with others. That's what work we have to do. That is the foundation of this entire program. Faith without works is dead means getting out of myself and going and working with someone else, right? Getting out of myself so that God can finally work on me, so that God can come in, because I'm not corroded with self, so that I'm not sitting here going, oh my God, I need more self-care. I need to work on myself. I need to try and get rid of this character defect. And all I'm doing is more me, myself, and I. And when I'm, you know, attached by me all over the place, the sunlight of the spirit can't get into me. I don't have that connect with my higher power. But when I'm focused on you, when I'm focused on helping someone else, all of a sudden, all of that selfishness and self-centeredness is cleared away, if even for a second, and God can get in and start relieving me of my character defects. And I can't do that. You know, I can't fix something with the same brain that was, you know what I mean? Like, in order for me to get fixed, I need to get out of the way and help somebody else. And that's what this, you know, that's, I love this paragraph, because it's straight out of Bill's straight out of Bill's story. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for this alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, how? Well, through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's how. That's how. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it's just like that. I'm not going to read to you the whole chapter, but there's another highlight in this paragraph coming up. I wish we could just read every word in this, but when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. You know, that's in the next paragraph. That this is the common theme throughout the entire book. Like, there's only one goal here, and it's to get out of self and help somebody else. I mean, Dr. Bob said it best. You know, in the doctor's opinion, which we already went through, the doctor's opinion says that, we can be relieved of this, you know, alcoholic insanity. We can be easily able to control our drinking so long as we follow a few simple rules. What rules? Well, after we go through the steps, it's simple. 10, 11, and 12 is trust God, clean house, and help others. Wash, rinse, and repeat, right? Trust God, clean house, help others. Trust God, clean house, help others. And it's as simple as that. It really is. I mean, simple, not easy, right? So another highlight I have is it's a design for living that works in rough going. And I love that. I think it's beautiful. I wish I could read this whole thing. So at the bottom of the page, another highlight of mine is, we meet frequently. So why? Why do we have meetings? Why are there meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? So I can come and vent and get stuff off my chest because I'm only as sick as my secrets? No, that's what group therapy is for. That's what a sponsor is for. We meet frequently. Why? So that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek, right? That's why we meet. That's what meetings are for, so that newcomers can find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one might often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. Power. Uh-oh. I thought we were staying powerless forever. Nope. A new power flowed in, baby, right? Like, we work these steps, and we aren't sick and suffering anymore. So an alcoholic in his cusps is an unlovely creature. Wow, what an understatement. I like this too. I like this part, and it's just my highlight. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in us and through us, or we perish. So remember, this book has already described three times in three different places, actually, what work we have to do, what work faith without works is dead means. That means that a kindly act once in a while won't fit the bill. I have to be thinking of others. Faith has to work in me and through me 24 hours a day. That's the ultimate goal. When I'm in the grocery outlet, which is a store that they have here that is not, you know, it's a cheap store. You know, I go there for a couple things, peanut butter and some other stuff. When I see somebody there who is having trouble pushing her cart, you know, and I'm in a hurry because I got to pick my daughter up and I got to do this and I got to do that. And I got a sponsee calling on the phone and I see her struggling to get her vegetable oil, you know, like it would be really easy for me to avoid that aisle, get my shit and get out of there. But faith has to work in and through us 24 hours a day. And what is integrity? It's what we do when nobody's watching. So I have to go and help her to get her vegetable oil and then have to sit there and listen to how her cat is on the way to the vet. And I have to be present for her. And I have to explain to her kindly that I got to go pick my daughter up, but I have to do those things. It's not just about what I say and do in an AA meeting, 24 hours a day, not just the hour that I'm in the meeting. And that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road. That's what separates the men from the boys, right? As in step six would say in the 12 and 12. So So now we're going to get into whether there's a solution, which is awesome. And I just am going to read this last paragraph because it's beautiful. Most of us feel that we need no look no further for utopia. We have it right here and now. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill toward men. How simple is that? How beautiful is that in all of its power and simplicity? How beautiful is that? So I love the beginning of There Is a Solution. I don't have a favorite part of this first page. So I have to read every word of this first page. Page 17 is one of my favorite pages because it talks, first of all, about our primary purpose, right? Our fifth tradition, our common peril and our common solution. But secondly, it just is such a beautiful demonstration of the hope that is offered. I mean, listen to these words in this first paragraph and try to remain hopeless. You know, imagine yourself when you first came in, desperate and hopeless and like not knowing that there's an answer, right? And then reading Bill's story and going, oh my God, that guy might have been worse off than I am. Right? Like he was pretty hopeless, delirium tremens and all of, I mean, Bill was pretty hopeless in the beginning of his story. And so now the first part of this paragraph opens up. We of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were just as hopeless as Bill. Oh my God. Like we just read Bill's story. That's pretty bad, right? Nearly all have recovered. What a message of hope. And then that next line, they have solved the drink problem. Full stop. Full stop. That's pretty loud. Those two sentences are pretty loud. I don't know, you know, for if your program consists of going to meetings to tell other people to keep going to meetings, I don't know how you can get around that paragraph. Well, maybe that's why a lot of meetings don't read this book anymore. So, but for me, you know, that's a pretty awesome message of hope because I really didn't know that there was such thing as a recovered alcoholic. I didn't know that we do recover. I thought we stay sick and suffering every day for the rest of our lives. And, you know, just use the phone list and make more meetings and just white knuckle it from one meeting to the next and use my tools, which I had no idea were spiritual. I thought they were human power tools, like pick up the phone. It's a 50-pound phone, but pick it up. I'm sorry. But like, if you want to drink, I mean, and I am not a sponsor for everyone. I am not. I you know, and I'm so grateful because ain't nobody got time for that, right? But I am, you know, there's a wrench for every nut. I love that saying. But if I'm sponsoring you and we've gone through the steps and you pick up the phone and you call me because you want a drink, I'm not going to talk you out of it. I'm going to say, you know, then drink. I mean, obviously you haven't hit a sufficient bottom. Me helping to prolong that bottom isn't doing nobody any favors. Like obviously something has been missed. Now, if you pick up the phone to call me because you don't want to drink, now we can get into some work, right? If you're tempted to drink and you pick up the phone because you don't want to drink, then absolutely. Let's open this book. Let's see what we can do. Are you working with others? How many sponsees have you called today? How many, you know, I mean, we got some work to do, but if you want to drink, nothing's going to stop you. Least if not, it will be me for sure. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupants are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We are people who would normally not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding, which is indescribably wonderful. We are like passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril, peril means danger, right? We all have that abnormal reaction to alcohol. We all have King alcohol has entered our lives. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement that binds us. Now they're using the word cement. Remember when we were in the beginning of Bill's story and it was talking about the willingness that is the foundation. The cement is absolutely step one, the willingness. Cornerstone step two, keystone step three, absolutely. But the cement is also someone else's 12th step. And so the 12th step and the first step, working with others, is the other element. It's not just, so the cement, the foundation isn't just the first step, it's also the 12th step. It's also the solution, not just, so the next line is, but that in itself would have never held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we've discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to all who suffer from alcoholism. Imagine a world. Imagine a world of perfect Alcoholics Anonymous. And of course, we'll never get there. And who would want to get there? That would be boring, right? But imagine a world where this is true. Imagine a fellowship where we have discovered a common solution on which we can absolutely agree and upon in which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. What if this book was still used as our common solution? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have heard things like the essential oils that are supposed to keep the thoughts of a drink away. I've heard things like, you know, the special exercise and yoga routines. I've heard things like the medication that, you know, can block the sensors to, I mean, I've heard a whole bunch of solutions, but our common solution is the other part of that cement, the powerful cement that binds us. And that's what provides our unity, is our unified message. Is the way that we only have one program. We only have one message. We only have one recipe, right? Comes with a lot of ingredients, but there's only one recipe. And that is the news this book carries to all who suffer from alcoholism, the great news. And thank God that we put it in the book, because if we still played with that telephone game, that game of telephone, it would be a lot more controversy and disunity. So I love this next page too. I love every page in this chapter. We hope this volume will inform and comfort all who are or may be afflicted. Well, I'll just go back up. I'm trying to skip around so I don't have to read every word, but okay, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it's an illness. And notice how this literature, it doesn't ever call it a disease. I don't care if you want to call it a disease, that's fine. Sometimes I call it a disease. I'm not in the debating society on that. Like, I don't think it does any damage to call it a disease. I don't think it does any good to call it a disease. I have no opinion on that. But just so you know, they did avoid using that word. So in an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe that it's an illness, involves those about us in a way that no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him and no one is angry or hurt, but not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase this list. Now, here's some powerful stuff. We hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are or may be afflicted with afflicted. There are many affected. Sorry, there are many highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. This is where it's getting into the only an alcoholic can help an alcoholic, right? Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. But the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So not just an ex-problem drinker, but an ex-problem drinker who is armed with this, the doctor's opinion, right? Who's armed with facts about himself, can generally win the confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours, just like Bill did with Bob. After Bob was in the Oxford groups for 2.5 years, same spiritual principles, right? We've been over this, but it wasn't until, I mean, he had the clergy, the best medical doctors, the best, I mean, everybody at his disposals, all means it is, you know, at his disposals. He was a doctor and he was religious and he couldn't put 2.5 days together in 2.5 years until another alcoholic, properly armed with facts about himself, an ex-problem drinker, showed up and started talking about the facts about himself. And that magic of me too. Oh my God, me too. Me too happened. Thus Alcoholics Anonymous was born, right? And that's why that whole paragraph, in fact, is in italics. So the man who's making the approach, has had the same difficulty, not a similar difficulty. You know, I can't help somebody who's going to put their finger down their throat to because they have an eating disorder. Like, that's one of the reasons I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, is because I couldn't stand puking and I couldn't drink without ending up so drunk that I was hugging the toilet all night. You know, the same difficulty that he obviously knows what he's talking about. And his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that he is a man with a real answer. That there is no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful. That there's no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we've found most effective. Okay, this is tradition 9 for you tradition junkies. 8. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. None of us make a sole vocation of this work. Vocation, definition of vocation, career or occupation, for fee or for hire, not for free and for fun. Avocation means for fun and for free. Vocation means for fee or for hire. None of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, and a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respected homes and occupations and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in this sort of effort, which we're going to describe. A few, myself included, are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. Not sell, not charge for, give. For fun and for free, nearly all their time to this work. If we kept on the way we were going, there's little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close to hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many could recover if they had the opportunity, which we have enjoyed. However, then how then shall we present which has been so freely given to us? That's the question, right? Well, here we go. We have concluded to publish an anonymous volume, this book, right? Setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task of our, here's a highlight. Ready for this highlight? Combined experience and knowledge. That is the magic formula. That is the key. Any newcomer can come in drunk off the street and have the experience of being a drunk for the past 30 years. That's awesome. They have the experience. They have sufficient experience, right? Let's set him aside. that drunk newcomer. Anybody can go to college and get their degree and have all the knowledge. They can have the big book memorized and they can have all the knowledge in the world. But without that magic of Me Too, they're not going to be able to help another alcoholic. So the combined experience and knowledge of an ex-problem drinker, right? The highlights or the italics from the page previous. And that's the key. Someone who has the experience of this is what I was like, this is what happened, the knowledge, and this is what I'm like today. That's the key to this. So that combined experience and knowledge, this should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. Now we're going to get into tradition 10. I know this isn't a tradition workshop, but I can't help myself. I'm sorry. I'm Carrie B. you knew it when you asked me to do this big book workshop. So of necessity, there will have to be a discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial, right? And what's tradition 10? We have no opinion on outside controversial issues. So let's see what this is going to say. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. We shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and respect of their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers, again, right, like at the grocery outlet, depends on our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. That's the whole program. What can I do for you, not what can I get from you? I'm just going to tell you what it has to do with tradition 10. I sponsor this woman who she sponsors a lot of women. She sponsors a lot of newcomers. She's an amazing sponsor. She's far exceeded me in the spiritual growth area. But she was sponsoring this other newcomer, and this was a few years back, probably four years ago at least. And you guys can imagine what election I'm talking about, right? So there was a big political election and she's sponsoring this newcomer. And this newcomer, we picked up this newcomer in a ward, a detox ward. And this newcomer was like low bottom. She needed AA and my sponsee started sponsoring her and they started going through the book. And she was like 3 months sober at this point. And she had just done a third step. She just got her instructions on her fourth step. Every meeting for those 3 months, I mean, she was so in love with her sponsor, like not in love, but you know what I mean? Like she was like over the moon, happy about her sponsor, her choice in sponsorship. And every meeting she's like, well, my sponsor has me doing this. And my sponsor said this. And my sponsor said, I'm doing a really good job here. And my sponsor said, and everything, it was almost like, oh, shoot me now. All she talks about is her sponsor. Well, she was started on her fourth step the night before the election, the big election. I'm not going to tell you what election. The night before the election, my sponsee, so the sponsor of this woman, she posted something on her Facebook. Not blatant, not, you know, outright like, this is the way I feel. It wasn't mean, but it was enough information to where this new girl that she was working with, she knew what way she had voted. And all of a sudden, obviously my sponsee, the sponsor, had apparently voted the wrong way. Right. And all of a sudden the next morning, she woke up to this text message from this newcomer who had loved her up until then that says, thank you so much for all you've given me and all the time that you've given me, but we're not the right fit. And why I tell you that is because if I'm practicing these principles in all of my affairs, I have to watch what I say and what I do, not just in and around Alcoholics Anonymous, but in and around members of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially newcomers. Because if I'm sitting in a meeting and I say, I don't know, I open the door and kind of let the can of worms out accidentally and tell you whether I'm pro-life or pro-choice. Okay, which you'll never know. And I am pretty adamant about one or the other. And I'm proud to tell you, to this day, not a single one of my sponsees has a clue what my political thoughts are. Why? Because that's how I am of maximum service. And I'm telling you, if I said something that said that I was either pro-life or pro-choice in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of a sudden, 50% of the room, I'm less effective to. They're not going to come to me for help. Period. Doesn't matter if I'm right or wrong. Doesn't matter if they're right or wrong. That's not just that, you know, my real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and those about me. And if I'm saying stupid stuff in an AA meeting, that hurts my effectiveness, then that's just me again, putting my selfishness and self-centeredness above my ability to be of maximum helpfulness. And so this paragraph right here, it says shortcomings, you know, most of us sense that real tolerance of shortcomings and viewpoints and shortcomings, and we have respect for their opinions and attitudes. So like, you know, a few of us recovered alcoholics, we could go out to eat. We could go to, oh, yeah, totally. We could go out to eat together and probably talk about religion and politics a little bit. Right. And we have respect for each other. We know now the difference between, we know how to separate principles from personalities. A newcomer, brand new to AA, walking in. And by the way, I don't talk politics, even with recovered alcoholics. By the way, just clearing my name there. I don't. I stay completely away from it. But a newcomer, but if you do, that's perfectly fine. I just want to make sure that all my bases are covered there. But a newcomer coming into AA, not knowing how to separate principles from personalities, especially if they're super involved in what they believe in, and then they hear you saying something stupid at the coffee machine. I don't know. I love the way it says that, that this is how we become more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend on our constant thought of others. I am a debater, you guys. Like, I am a Facebook fighter. And when I was new, before I understood these principles, like, I was on Facebook debate pages. I mean, every political page I was on there running my mouth. And I mean, and I still have strong feelings, but my AA family don't know what any of those feelings are. And I plan to keep it that way. And when I see one of those old Facebook, is lovely how they send you a remember when once in a while, remember when you posted this 10 years ago, and you're like, delete, you know, before anybody can see it. But it's changed the way, like, I'll see something on Facebook and I'll be like, oh my gosh, type. And then right before I hit send, I'm like, oh God, please remove my natural desire to be right and to prove to these people why they're wrong, and help me get my focus back on my primary purpose, which is staying sober and helping the next alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And thank you for my gift of making me uniquely qualified to help the next sick and suffering alcoholic. You know, I have to do that. I have for myself. I'm not telling you guys you have to. I'm just for myself. That's how I remain effective. you may already be asking yourself, why is it that all of us became so very ill from drinking? Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. I think it's funny how it says that in the face of expert opinion to the contrary. Who's expert opinion? I don't know, your drug and alcohol counselor, the treatment center that relies on 92% of their revenue is return customers. I don't know. I don't know, you know, maybe. But it says here that those expert opinions are to the contrary, that we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. All right, then, let's get to it, right? Like we shall, okay, I love this. We shall tell you what we have done. Before going into detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them. How many times have have people said to us, and ask yourself this, this is amazing. I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. Oh, his willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he would stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. Well, these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see these experiences refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. What is the definition of an allergy again? Do you guys remember in the beginning of the book, the definition of an allergy is an abnormal reaction to a food or substance. These people don't have that abnormal reaction. Their reactions are very different from ours to alcohol. I have that highlighted. So of course they're going to go, what is he thinking? The doctor said if he ever drank again, it would kill him. And there he is, all lit up again. Why would that be? Right? And it's because they don't have that reaction to alcohol. They don't have that abnormal reaction. 90% of the world can drink with impunity. And they don't know why we can't. And that makes sense. That makes perfect sense to me. Because I wouldn't understand it. Like, I love the jaywalking analogy. Like, it's like, why would you walk in front of that fire truck? That it doesn't make sense to me. Well, because I don't have that. And the normal drinker who doesn't have the abnormal reaction doesn't understand why I continue to drink. So it's not their fault, those poor normies. Moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely. If they have a good reason for it, they can take it or leave it alone. So of course they wouldn't understand why we can't, right? Now we're going to talk about the non-alcoholic called the hard drinker. And just a little, FYI, and this is something to watch for. When you go into big book studies, and you hear big book thumpers talking down about the problem drinker and saying, you know, the problem drinker destroys AA because they're not real alcoholics. Well, I'm sorry, but they're not thumping their big book good enough then, because every time this book or any of our literature for that matter refers to the problem drinker, they're talking about the real alcoholic. The big book thumper who is trying to sound like they know what they're talking about, they're meaning to say the hard drinker. Every time this literature quotes about the hard drinker, they're talking about the non-alcoholic. When they're talking about the problem drinker, they're actually, every single instance that they refer to the problem drinker, it's someone who has a problem when they drink, and that's an alcoholic. The hard drinker is what this next paragraph is going to talk about. And what is a hard drinker? Well, you know, the alcoholism, it's not a habit, right? It's not an addiction. You can't drink your way into alcoholism. Like, you either have that abnormal reaction or you don't. Like, the first time I ever took a drink, I had an abnormal reaction and I wasn't addicted to alcohol. I had never had a drink before, right? So it wasn't a habit. So this is why this is going to explain the hard drinker and the person who just drinks so much every single day that they become, you know, so here we go. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him mentally and physically. Those two words again, right? Those two, mental and physical. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficient, strong enough reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man also can also stop or moderate. So the hard drinker, he can stop or moderate given a sufficient reason, although he might find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. So it's saying he might be so physically addicted to alcohol, he might need to go into treatment. You know, he might need detoxed. My neighbor, six houses down when I was new, I screamed from the top of the rooftops. but I was in AA, you know, it was the coolest thing. Cause I just like had this spiritual experience and I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence that I didn't even know existed. Right. And so I'm telling everybody at the mailbox and the grocery store that I'm an AA. It's amazing. Come to AA. And I don't know anything about the traditions. And so I'm sure that I was running my mouth early on to her, cause how else would she know? And she comes to the house one day and she's knocking on the door. I'm about 2 years sober. And she says, "Are you still alcoholic?" And I say, "Yeah, I sure am." And she says, "I think I have a problem." And she seems very scared. This lady's like, I don't know, in her late 70s, early 80s, probably. And she says, "You know, my doctor, I have a hip replacement surgery tomorrow. And my doctor said I can't drink for 48 hours. And I never thought I had a problem with alcohol, but I haven't drank. I didn't drink last night and I'm shaking. And I'm wondering if it's detoxing." And I said, "Oh, well, probably. You're probably an alcoholic. You know, this is when I want to just diagnose everyone as alcoholic." And I say, well, how much do you drink?" And she goes, "Well, I mean, I have almost a glass of wine." And I said, "Oh, like a glass of wine, right?" Like, and she's like, "Well, no, a 4 ounce glass." I'm a 4 ounce glass of wine. And she goes, "But I drink every night." And I said, "Oh, you drink every day. You're a daily drinker." And she says, "Yeah, I drink every day." And I said, "But you don't get drunk?" And she says, "No, I've never been drunk." And I'm like, I don't get this. Like, I can't wrap my head around it. So she goes to her doctor, and her doctor told her, and she came back to report to me, that, you know, that she's physically dependent on alcohol because she had drank a glass of wine every night for the past 30 years and her body was used to it. And so then she's telling me, you know, so she's addicted to alcohol. Addiction and alcoholism are two very, 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 very different things, right? There's 212 step fellowships for addiction. This is the only one for alcoholism. And so she says to me the next day actually it wasn't even the next day. She came back to report to me a few days later, right? After her surgery or whatever, maybe it was a week or two. I don't remember. But then 2 years later, I'm 4 years sober and I see her at the mailbox and she says, "Carrie," or actually she calls me Karen. She still calls me Karen, but she says, "Karen." And I say, "Yeah." And she's like, "I just wanted to let you know that I'm not alcoholic." And I said, yeah, you told me that. We established that. And apparently this woman, she doesn't drink every night anymore because she never wants to become dependent on it again. But she has a glass of wine at her granddaughter's wedding, or a glass of champagne at her granddaughter's wedding. And on Christmas, she has some wine with the turkey. And she's like, drinks with impunity. And she just knows not to start drinking every day again. And that's, you know, so that's great. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess like that's great. She was a heavy drinker. She was, you know, addicted to alcohol. So the next sentence says, the next paragraph, "But what about the real alcoholic?" Page 21 club, right? This is, if you're a real alcoholic, you're on the page. See, look at my tattoo. I got a tattoo. I had to tattoo this to my skull so that I never forget. I'm part of the page 21 club. Like, I am not a heavy drinker. Is that the right side? Yeah, it was the right side. I'm not the heavy drinker. I can't drink alcohol with impunity. I need to remember that for the rest of my life. The description of my type of alcoholism is on page 21 of the big book where it starts. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off a moderate drinker. Get this. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. You don't even have to be a daily drinker. You can even be a binge drinker, right? Who knew? Who knew? But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Me too. There's the identification. Me too. And so this is one of the three qualifying pages. You know, if you got a prospect that you don't know if they're alcoholic or not, page 21, page 44, and doctor's opinion where we've already highlighted. So that is the paragraph that kind of, it closes in all the loopholes that the alcoholic is trying to find as a way out for themselves, as a way of saying, yeah, but I'm different. Yeah, but I'm not a daily drinker. Yeah, but I've never been physically addicted. Well, neither have I. I never had to go through detox. I never had the DTs. I never had to check into a facility. What makes me an alcoholic is once I start drinking, I can't stop. I don't stop until I run out, blackout, or pass out. And once I'm stopped, because I've ran out, blacked out, or passed out, then I come to swearing it off forever. And for some reason, I'm drunk again because I have a mental obsession that tells me I don't have that physical allergy, or I can outthink it or outdrink it. You know, like that is what makes me a real alcoholic. So, yeah, it's about question time, I guess. So I'll stop there on page 21 club.
This week on Market, where we left off. Perfect. Thank you so much, Carrie. Amazing as always. Okay, on to questions. If people can possibly please send their questions into the chat to myself, and I will put them to Carrie. We only have one so far, so everyone get your thinking caps on and get your questions sent in, please. So Carrie, how do you distinguish being of maximum usefulness, etc., versus people pleasing?
Oh, you know, I don't think there's been a single time in the past 5 years that I would be accused of being a people pleaser. I've been called a lot of things. No, that's not true. In fact, prayer and meditation, and a whole lot of asking God to reveal the truth, because I'll share something that just happened recently. I chair my home group business meetings, and I actually let a member of my home group as the chair take the entire group hostage for 12 and a half minutes on a dissertation of everything the group has been doing wrong. And I didn't let anyone else have 12 and a half minutes, you know, to read their group inventory that they have taken for our group. I didn't give, you know, and the whole reason that I didn't cut this person off and stop that is because I didn't want to upset this member. You know, because this member has some outside stuff that I feel sorry, you know, and I was being a people pleaser when it was entirely inappropriate. It was disunifying to the group, and it was me wanting to be liked and wanting to not upset someone before the unity of the group. And I was wrong for doing that. And, you know, I've talked to my sponsor, I've talked to my service sponsor, I've done inventory, I plan to make the group an amends, but it was, it still gets the best. I mean, we're human. So we're always striving for spiritual progress and not spiritual perfection.
Thank you, Carrie. And there's no other questions. Oh, there's one that comes in just right that second. There are groups that are reading the Bible in AA now. Is that a tradition 4 privilege or a tradition 10 break? That's not really a step.
Okay, after this question, because I didn't say it before, I'm going to really try to stay away from tradition questions. Because it's really hard for me to stay away from traditions. And this is a good practice for me. And B, because that's not what this workshop's about. So yes, it's absolutely 100% a violation of tradition 10. No, a group cannot read the Bible in it. I mean, there's other things in play around that, but yes, that is disunifying for sure.
What would you have to say to recovered, recovering, spiritual maintenance, daily reprieve?
Oh, well, we're not there yet. And I try to not jump ahead too much, but that's one of my favorite questions ever. So I will talk about that. So I had a daily reprieve from drinking alcohol before I was recovered. by going to lots of meetings and not drinking in between. That was my daily reprieve. It was human power. I was going to 3 meetings a day. Crazy as all get out, but super, super sober, right? And that was my daily reprieve, sometimes minute reprieve. Like I got to get to another meeting. And then I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and I experienced this unbelievable psychic change. And like the promises say on step 10 promises say on the bottom of page 84 into page 85, like, well, I'll just read part of it because it's beautiful. Okay. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Like I got in the ring with King Alcohol over and over and over again, and I never knew how to tap out. Like I'd get my ass handed to me day after day after day. And I just would get up for round 2, round 3, round 4, round 5. And I never tapped out. And by the time I get to this step, I had ceased fighting even alcohol. I had gotten out of the ring. I waved that white flag. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Like we will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we feel that this has happened automatically. We feel that our new attitude toward liquor has been toward liquor, not toward people, places, and things. I love Al-Anon family groups. I did 2 years there, but this is Alcoholics Anonymous. So let's keep the focus on Alcoholics Anonymous. And the focus is liquor, not people, places, and things. We see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. I would call that a recovered alcoholic. Now, if you're still having to avoid the cheese aisle so that you don't have to go down the same aisle as the beer in the grocery store, I would consider that not a recovered alcoholic, probably still recovering. The next paragraph talks about the daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. No, I am not in fit spiritual condition every day. Ask my home group at the last business meeting, right? I would be drunk if I had to be in fit spiritual condition every day. This doesn't say we have a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. This says we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And maintenance is an action word. Maintenance is an action word, contingent on the actions that I'm willing to take, not the meetings that I'm willing to make, not the stuff, I'm contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So what does that mean? Well, it means that I have to take the action to maintain. So, you know, my lawn doesn't just grow on its own. If I don't do the maintenance, it's gonna turn brown, get weeds, and die. That's just the facts. If I maintain it, if I make my husband mow it, and I make my husband fertilize it, and I make my daughter water it, then it's gonna grow. If you do maintenance, it's gonna grow. If you don't do maintenance, it's gonna die, right? We grow or go, right? And I love that. And so my daily reprieve isn't contingent on my spiritual condition. I am not in fit spiritual condition every day of my life. My daily reprieve is contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, on the actions I'm willing to take, on the actions of, I have to stop what I'm doing and go down that aisle and help that woman with her groceries. I have to speak up in the middle of a business meeting, look like the bad guy and say, I'm sorry, but that's over to your 2 minutes. Is there any discussion on this item? You know, I have to pick up the phone, even when I don't want to, when a sponsee is calling to tell me for the 200th time about her boyfriend's program. I'm not going to sit here and give you my 11th step inventory right now, but those are the actions that I have to take. I have to call my sponsor and tell her honestly my own inventory and look at myself when it's hard to look at myself. I have to pray and meditate even when I don't want to. And that's what my daily reprieve consists of. And it has nothing to do with not drinking. We don't not drink one day at a time. We live life on life's terms one day at a time after we recover from alcoholism. And that is in concept 9 in your 12 concepts in your world services manual. It's the only place that you'll hear any of our literature talk about one day at a time. And that's where you can find that. Thanks. Great question.
Thank you, Carrie. What would you say to a woman who wants to be taken through the book, who in your opinion is not alcoholic and has admitted doesn't identify with other alcoholics?
I say everybody has a right to go through the book. Not the program can help anybody with any affliction. That's my honest belief. That is not written in AA literature anymore. That's my opinion. The program can help anybody with any affliction and any addiction. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is reserved for alcoholics, and we can't imply that Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship, is for anyone other than alcoholics. But again, that's why there's over 200 different 12-step fellowships out there. We're not unique to having a spiritual disease. We're not unique on having a spiritual malady. And so I don't know if this person feels that they need the 12 steps because they're codependent or because they have a drug problem or because they have a gambling issue. But I know that those 12 steps are used in multiple different 12-step fellowships, and everyone should have a right to them. It just can't be called AA.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Silkworth told Bill he would die if he continued drinking. Do you know how long Dr. Silkworth worked with Bill?
I don't.
Neither do I. Good answer. Thank you.
I don't know. That's my favorite answer in the whole world when I get to say that, because I'm a know-it-all and I want to know everything, but that I love being able to answer, I don't know. I'll find out before next week and I will bring it back and tell you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Carrie. How do you, or do you, test a new person's willingness? Do you use intuition based on your own experience?
So that's a really good question. Thank you for that question. My test radar meter has gone from one extreme to the next in my experience with sponsorship. I was a sponsor from hell for a couple of years when I first started sponsoring. And today, I try to, and I will say that this came from my 2 years that I did in Al-Anon family groups, working on people, places, and things, which is where you go to for that. Today, I'll just answer what I hate to admit what I used to do, because it's still very hard to talk about. And I do admit it, but today I don't chase. I don't test. I lay out the set of spiritual tools for your examination, and you're either going to pick it up or you're not. You know, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. I can't shove this thing down anyone's throat, and I can't give someone willingness. I can give someone direction. I can give someone suggestion. I can give someone prayer. I can give someone love. I can give someone support, but I cannot give anyone willingness. And I've learned that. And so I do what the chapter Working with Others says. And I don't want to jump ahead too much. So we'll go through that.
Perfect. Thank you, Carrie. I'm a call me every day sponsor, but only in the beginning. What do you say?
Well, I would be a hypocrite if I said anything other than I met with someone this morning at 10:30 who asked me last week to be, you know, if for sponsorship, if I would sponsor them. And I met with her this morning to go over my list of what I would expect, what I do, what I don't do, all that stuff. And she asked me that question this morning. Do you want me to call you every day? And I'll just tell my honest answer was, please don't. So I just don't have time for that. You know, I just don't. There've been times in my sobriety that you would have to call me every day until we're done with your third step. Like that was a rule of mine, a steadfast rule. I've seen that in my experience, and this is just for me, it started to grow an unhealthy dependency. And I want the women that I work with to start to depend on God, their sponsorship family, which I do. So, you know, when we first start working together, I don't tell you to call me every day, but I do give you a list of about 25 different women who I sponsor, or I sponsor their sponsor or my sponsor. And all of our sponsorship line is on there. And I say, get to work calling these ladies, because we don't do this alone, you know, and you need to start creating the fellowship you crave. This fellowship is going to start building up around you. I am not the end all be all. I am not perfect. I fall short constantly and chronically. And so you need to start calling and getting a kind of a, you know, a fellowship. And so I do offer a phone list. It's just not, my phone number is not the only one on it.
Perfect. Again, thank you. We're down to the last question. So if anyone has any more questions, please send them in. Qualifying the prospect, what do you do if you think somebody isn't an alcoholic?
There's been a few of those, and so far, knock on wood, you know, I mean, if it's questionable, I don't tell anybody that they don't qualify. Like, I just don't, you know, and I don't get to tell anybody that they don't qualify if they're not asking me for help. I don't get to sit in a meeting and listen to somebody share that they've never drank before and get and have to interrupt the meeting and say, then you don't qualify, get out. Like, that's not my right. I get to, if somebody asks me for my help and I go through the time to go through, you know, pages 21, 44 and the doctor's opinion, and they answer those questions honestly, and it's like, I don't like drinking, I don't like alcohol. My problem, you know, once I start drinking, I don't get drunk because I can't force myself to take anymore because I hate the way it tastes. I hate the way it smells. I hate the way it makes me feel. But I love snorting cocaine, you know, and it's like, okay, well, let's go to a CA meeting. And I find an open meeting and I do the footwork because they've asked for my help. And just because I can't help everybody doesn't mean I can't help them to find the help that they need. And I've been to my share of CA meetings and I am not a cokehead. And so I go to open meetings. I don't participate. I've been to HA meetings. I've been to CA meetings. I've been to HA meetings. I've been to NA meetings. I've been to, I mean, you know, and it's awesome because it's awesome to see that magic, you know, to see that magic, someone who's been struggling in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not identifying, to see the lights come on in their eyes and to see the look of, oh my God, these are my people. And it just reminds me of when I finally found AA. And it's just as much of a joy as sitting across the table with another alcoholic when their lights come on because they can identify with me. Just because they can't identify with me, it doesn't mean that I can't introduce them to people that they're going to find that magic of me too with.
Excellent. What would you tell someone who feels their sponsor doesn't provide the guidance or solutions? How do I know if the sponsor isn't the one for me? So I'll repeat that. What would you tell someone who feels their sponsor doesn't... Oh, chat just jumped. Doesn't provide the guidance or solutions. How do I know if this sponsor isn't the one for me?
I'm not really one to tell anybody to go get a new sponsor. I respect any sponsor who's going to take the time to help somebody, another alcoholic in AA. I mean, that's already more than what 50% of our members do. You know, I've known people in AA who don't sponsor and who won't sponsor. So I can never talk down about the way that somebody else sponsors because at least they're doing it. But if, you know, sponsorship isn't a marriage. If you're not getting what you feel that you need out of your sponsor, even if it's me, and this is what I tell the women I work with, it's not about hurting anybody's feelings. Like, I will even help you to find more of what you're after. So, I mean, keep your ears open, I guess, and go after whoever has what you want. That's the only thing I can say because that's my experience, even with service sponsorship. You know, for me, I was just a little, the service sponsor I have now, I was just a little 6 year sober, like new GSR, and I called up a trustee at the general service office to bitch him out about some talk that I thought he gave wrong. And after 2 hours of listening to him go, me go off on him, he said, "Man, you need guidance." And I said, "Okay, will you be my service sponsor?" And so, you know, I mean, go after what you're after. I mean, I go after the best. And I drank top shelf liquor. I want top shelf AA.
Working, I love this next question. Working with others mentions getting to know the family members. Have you done that much?
I have not. I love the fact that working with others as well as the family afterward and two wives have asterisks that point you in the direction of some information saying that 12 years after this book was written, Al-Anon family groups came to be. And I don't want Al-Anon family groups stepping on the toes of AA members. And so I try to offer them the same respect. And I don't go after people who are, you know, could be better helped in Al-Anon family groups. I have taken some family members to an Al-Anon family group before, but once I get them in touch with someone who they will experience the magic of me too with, then my hands are off. I did have a husband call me. I've had a few husbands call me. You know, one of them was looking for his wife. He thought that she was out on another, you know, bender. I had to have that talk with him that, you know, you can't call me and do that with the circumstances. And I'm not going to go into detail because this is not someone who has given me permission to talk about her story. And I'll try to get that from her. I still sponsor her, but since she's not given me permission, I'm not going to go into her story. But the circumstances around that were such that it was a very inappropriate thing for him to do to reach out to me. And so I did offer him, I actually gave him the book Lois Remembers and the Courage to Change Al-Anon Family Groups book and gave him two phone numbers. And that's as far as I went.
Excellent. Thank you. And typical with 3 minutes left, the questions are starting to fly in now. So what do we do when there are no local meetings appropriate for the non-alcoholic who appears in an AA meeting? For example, no NA, no CA, no HA. Right now, meetings can be found online, but the addict wants in-person contact.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Well, if there's no NA meetings, that means that your AA meetings are filled with selfish and self-centeredness still. And that means, because I'm sorry, but there just is not that many pure alcoholics. And if the alcoholics who are also addicts have not saw the need to be of maximum service to God and those about them and created these fellowships, then two or three narcotic addicts sitting in an AA meeting may call themselves an NA group, so long as they don't imply affiliation with any other outside enterprise, right? So they need to step up and get an NA meeting going. And even as a non narcotic addict who's never been addicted to any. Well, I think I tried to quit coffee one time a couple of years ago, and I had a really bad migraine headache for 2 days. And so I think that's an addiction, but I think that's a physical addiction. So maybe I'm not completely not an addict, but I don't have any right, you know, sharing in an NA meeting by any stretch of the imagination. I am a freaking drunk, a puking, peeing my pants, sometimes pooping my pants drunk. And so with that said, I have been able to offer behind the scenes help in the spirit of cooperation and not affiliation to other drug addicts to help them to start meetings. And any responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous can do that. Bill Wilson gives some pretty clear-cut instructions even how to do that in the pamphlet Problems Other Than Alcohol and the book Language of the Heart.
Thanks, Carrie. Would emerge two questions, because the last question, can you fit it into a minute, is how would you describe a psychic change?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Spiritual experience for me was a little different than my psychic change. And I know I'm a word girl and it's probably semantics to most of you guys, but my spiritual experience was when I was like, oh my God, I not only don't want to drink, I haven't wanted to drink or even thought about a drink in months. That was a spiritual experience as a result of the steps. The psychic change has happened slower for me. And the psychic change is when I wake up in the morning and instead of my first thought, and I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody here, but and if you wake up every morning with untreated alcoholism, great. That's good for you. Keep doing what you're doing. I do not wake up every morning with untreated alcoholism. And the reason I know that, and I believe that's my psychic change, is because I used to wake up in the morning and the first thing I would think of is, oh, not again. I have to go get my daughters this ready. I have to do this. I have to, you know, and today, the first thing I think of when I open my eyes, and this isn't every day, but it is by far most days, is, okay, God, checking in for duty. What will you have me be? That is not Carrie B. Like that is a psychic change. I don't know what else to call it.